cast of people went, "Yeah, Martin, they want a meeting with you, the cast of people." And I met up with, I think her name, Maureen Hughes.
Oh, yeah, Maureen. Yeah. She's a lovely woman.
I had a one-on-one meeting with her, and straight away she went, "I saw your tape. You're not an actor."
She knows.
Oh, she's out straight.
Yeah. I was straight, and she was like, I've worked with them all. We'll work here for an hour, and I'll make you better." And after an hour, she went, "I don't think it's going to work."
Me and Dustin the Turkey were doing a play, and I remember the casting director saying to me,
"It's a long way from Barry Keoghan, isn't it?"
Yeah.
It was actually Barry Keoghan that was playing the tour. Yeah.
Johnny Marnes, he had his hand shoved up his arse.
Maybe a different version of Saltburn. Dustin the Turkey.
You let me know when you're ready to go there, Will.
I'm ready to go there, Will.
You ready to go there, Will?
Yep.
First podcast I've done where no one wants to be here. Where are we getting out of here?
Sell, man. Now, look, we have to go, yeah.
Get this done.
Ten minutes in.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you may have already heard, the dulcet tones of our guest this week on You Must Be Joking, it is the one and only Mr. Martin Angolo! Martin, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Cheers, pleasure to be here.
Well, very welcome, Martin. Great to see you.
And great observation there, Martin. First time I've ever been on a podcast where nobody wants to be here.
It's just been one of them days.
It's been a wild day. I was off doing a shoe for Joe, and you were walking.
Don't fucking try to drag me into this. You're here on time.
No, I was
at the shoe. You were walking.
He's here an hour. I was at the shoe going, "Oh, bollocks, Martin and Willie waiting for me." And then Martin
walked in from Tala and he was here before you.
No, he texted me. He says, "Eric, I'm just letting you know I'm running a bit late." And I was fucking delighted. You ever been delighted that a guest is late? "Oh, nice, Martin." I mean, that's terrible, man. You need to be more punctual.
Yeah, you take a time, Martin. What was that, Mr. Tato?
Yeah, Eric sent me a voice though. I hear champagne bottles popping up. Yeah. Just wrapping up here.
Yeah. Trip music. Martin Angolo, it's great to have you. One of Ireland's fastest rising stars. And it's a great day what we brought you on, Martin, because you've announced your biggest solo show to date.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I'm doing the Liberty Hall in November, November 2nd. Get the plug in.
Yeah.
Biggest show I've ever done. You have to go for it, don't you?
Exactly. That's it.
Well overdue, Martin. Oh, I have to say. Well overdue. I'm a big fan of yours years. I remember when you started first. I just love your material. I love the deadpanness of it sometimes, the delivery, the way you set it up. You bring people down this way and then you kind of just pull the handbrake up in the car. It's great. And come here. Well deserved to be doing Liberty Hall. And it's only the beginning of bigger stuff. I definitely would say for you,
I was expecting to have the piss taken out of me.
We're only in a couple of minutes, Martin.
We're just sucking up to you because we were late. Well, I was late. Martin, tell us how long you are at Nolly. How did you get into it? You might as well talk us through that.
I started about 10 years ago.
Right.
I started in the Battle of the Axe, Halfpenny Bridge Inn.
Ah, yes. Tony Ferns.
Yeah. And I was not a performer or anything, but wanted to write jokes and see if they were funny. But, didn't know how to do it. And then if you look up online how to become a comedian, all the advice is from England. They tell you, all the clubs are always busy. It'll take you 6 months to get a gig. So it's like, okay, I'll book a gig now for 6 months in a head.
Yeah.
And I'll write some jokes. Text Tony Ferns. He's like, "Are you around next week?" Straight in.
What are you doing tomorrow night?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Are you outside to help me now?
And it was the week, I don't know if you remember, they had the RTE New Comedy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
So all the people who were on that, it was the final of it. So all the people who were on that.
They were in testing their stuff.
So I'm there going, all these professionals who have been watching.
Oh, yeah.
And I did all right.
Did you find that intimidating? A little bit? Because we were nervous going in at the start, obviously you were.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, of course, your first game.
Did you bring any mates in?
No, I didn't tell anyone.
Fair play.
I hate people I know being in the room as well.
Okay, right.
I think that's a clever move, Martin.
Yeah.
Some people mightn't say, because you see these newcomer nights and all that,
yeah,
and they're bringing gangs in.
Yeah.
And come here a lot of times, people just kind of, they get it over the bar, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes people fucking die in the hole.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's nothing worse than dying in your hole when your family member's there. Because I mean, if you do die in your hole, you can go home and tell a white lie and kind of go,
"Oh,
no, it was all right. I done all right." And they laughed at this bit. But I mean, when you've got family members in,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
it's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
And you don't
sake.
Want the false confidence of everyone giving you.
But
your
this is it. It's a false representation. If all your mates are laughing at shit you're coming out with, it's a false representation.
And had you ever done that on stage before? Had you never performed before?
little things in school. I'd write funny things in school. And sort of like in my school, every Christmas, they do a thing where they give every class a fucking a dance to do or something.
Right.
And I wanted to get out of that.
Okay.
So I'd be like, oh, I'll host a raffle or something. And I do a little bit. So I do some old jokes at that and whatever.
Right. So you're on a stage, man, then, yeah?
A little bit on the stage. Yeah, yeah. Those are sort of the first gigs. And yeah, but I've never, like, everyone was surprised when I started doing it.
Okay.
Like, what would you be doing? Like, all my mum's mates are like, I've never been encouraged.
Right.
Which I think is a big help.
Right.
It's a real South Dublin inner city thing, isn't it? Why would you want to do that?
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
yeah, do you know what I mean?
There's no money in that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You're always surprised. Oh, yeah, you're doing all right. I didn't think it would work out.
all these lads who were doing the Irish Comedy Awards were in there. So you went on.
I went on as well. But that's what helped me because it was all professionals on the night. So everyone looked professional. So I looked like I was professional. And I think who was hosting? I think Alison Spittle was hosting. And she went, oh, I haven't seen you around. She goes, there's this Facebook forum, and here's some clubs to get in contact with. And then she goes, how long have you been doing that? I went, that was my first gig. And she goes, I shouldn't have given you those contacts.
No, it's from Alison.
Obviously impressed. Fair play. And then, so then you got a bit of a bug for it, was it?
Bit of a bug for it. Yeah, I mean, first gig was great. Second gig was fucking disaster.
It's always the way, man.
Yeah.
Always the way.
Yeah. It was in a restaurant in Dalkey.
Oh wow. Jeez, you're not off to a good start there already. No. Like,
I was like three people in.
Oh, jeez.
And like, it was a couple and a lad who was just there for food. He wasn't there for comedy. Oh. And the comedy started around him and he wasn't having it. He was just eating his soup.
What was the lineup? Garlic bread.
Lobster.
Linguine. And the closer was bread and butter pudding.
I had to follow,
he ripped her up.
I had to follow tiramisu.
Notoriously difficult act to follow now, tiramisu.
She's amazing, isn't she?
Yeah, so, no, yeah, he was eating the soup. And I remember, actually the couple were laughing. They're all right. But the guy got a phone call and he went, I got to take this. So I've lost a third of the room.
One phone call.
Brilliant. And who else was on?
I'm trying to remember the names now. They're all, there's Donald Vaughan. Do you remember him? Donald Vaughan.
Do you? Yeah.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Donald Vaughan.
Yeah. Very camp.
Yeah. He's very good.
That's very good. I don't know if he's still doing it.
Yeah. I haven't heard about him.
FJ Murray. I don't
remember. I do. Yeah, remember him as well. The monk.
Yeah, the monk. He was the monk, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Like the monk stunt double. Wasn't he?
He was probably shot dead already.
He was a ringer for him, wasn't he?
Absolute ringer.
Yeah.
Did he used to dress up as a priest or was he a priest years ago?
He was.
Was he?
Yeah, he used to be a priest years ago.
That's right, he did.
Oh, he was a nice fella.
Just I actually liked him.
A bit unsettling, though, because I think he was the monk.
Yeah, he kind of seemed a little bit kind of uncomfortable in himself.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I got up. Now, come here, lovely man.
He used to be the
really nice fella.
Yeah. So, obviously wasn't comfortable with that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll become a Canadian. Can I go on with young fellas? Like, I'm not into this older crowd, you know what I mean?
But even the fact, Martin, right, that your second gig, right, okay, the Battle of the Acts is like, it's an institution, or it's comedy, you know, a lot of big acts have come through there. But your second gig is in a restaurant in Dalkey. Are you already thinking, what the fuck is comedy in Ireland like? What's the story like? Were you aware that you might be performing in really shit or unconventional venues?
Yeah, no, well, the first year was like you're playing in all these shit. Like, I remember there was a place in, do you remember the Maple Hotel?
Oh, yeah.
And that was dodgy enough. you get like your man who ran it used to be delighted. He'd be like, oh, we got 10 tourists in.
Oh, yes.
Got double figures.
None of them speak English.
Yeah. And we'd all die. And he was like,
oh, 15 quid tonight.
Yeah, no, I was just used to but after that restaurant gig, you're like, I can't get any worse than that.
Yeah. Yeah,
battle hardened already.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, when you say like you were in school and you were writing jokes and all that, was there comedians out there that you really loved that would not say inspired you or anything like that, but it just made you laugh?
No, you know,
did you even go to live gigs in Ireland?
Never went to live gigs.
There you go, like myself. Yeah,
never followed it really. Like, I'd see like my mum would watch like Lee Evans on the telly or something.
Yeah,
but I'd be like, I can't do that. Yeah. You know, I'm not that kind of performer. I can't sweat that much.
Yeah, well, I can.
Yeah.
I sweat that much trying to get here.
I
actually watched Lee Evans the other night, one of them big arenas. Like, yeah. I tell you, Eric, you need more than a blinking clicker for where Lee Evans is playing, man.
Oh, I know.
You'd have arthritis in your thumb going like that all night. Yeah. And
I think if I had a big venue like that and I sold it out, I wouldn't be at the door with a clicker. I think I'd
depends on who the fucking promoter was.
That's a very good point, Villa. Very good point.
You won't go on that. No, but I was looking at Lee Evans and it's like the suit, as you know, he was soaked.
Drenched.
Yeah.
He was completely saturated. Yeah, yeah. But it's a very high energy, very high
intensity
performance, what he does. It's like all them characters and voices and faces and going across the stage, and it's like, Jesus Christ.
I think he handled his notice in, didn't he?
He did. He did. He did indeed. Jason Bourne was telling me he met him just before he retired.
Is that where he retired?
And Jason had never kind of met him before, and he said to Jason that his daughter was a big fan of Jason's.
No way.
Yeah, he said Jason was kind of real taken aback by it. Yeah. But he's just kind of one of them guys, I suppose, like the likes of Peter Kay, that you don't really see around. Do you know what I mean? They do these big, huge venues.
Arena tours.
They don't have a support.
No.
And they just go on and they do their own thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Hungry fucks. No, I mean, that's just each their own.
I mean,
and all
like,
that.
What's 250 to get a support?
yeah.
In an arena. Do you know what I'm saying? Lee Evans made a shitload of money.
Yeah.
And got out young.
Oh, yeah. Once time with the family and all that. But it's like, imagine being a support act for that, though.
I know.
Pressure.
Yeah.
Like, I know lads who've opened for Ricky Gervais. And there's a few stories. Like,
Johnny Candle.
No, but another guy, I won't say his name because this isn't the best story about Gervais.
Tell us about
Go on.
No, this is all right, because basically Gervais is like, because Gervais is particular and he's minted. So Gervais had an idea once. He was considering buying a hotel in London because he hates travelling. And he's just going to do like a month of gigs in this one hotel where basically he could get in a lift from his room, go down to the stage, walk out, do the gig, back to his room.
Wow.
He loves to be comfortable.
Yeah.
And then he started one show early, so you put the support act on early while people are still filing in, because he was like, I got to get back before 11 because the hotel stopped serving food. That's the power he has. Yeah. He's sending man out now. You know?
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Is that what money and power does to you?
It's me doing gigs in homeless shelters.
Yeah.
How is lads?
Yeah, well, come here, listen, we've all done mad gigs, really weird gigs.
Do you remember the one I sent you the photograph of what I got up? We done the bingo hall.
Oh, God. Oh, man, yeah. You remember Greg Max?
Yeah.
Greg, we love Greg. What a hero.
Yeah, look, inner Greg. Greg's a great fella. He's a good bloke, Greg. Mm-hmm. Sent me a message there actually a while ago. Yeah, I've always had to work with Greg.
Good lad, he is a good lad. But Greg booked us for this bingo hall gig.
In Cabra.
And it was a gala bingo. You know one of those huge bingo halls
where
the digital bingo cards are and plastic seats. Everything's like, there's hundreds and hundreds of rows, hundreds of seats. But when we walked in, we were like, wow, look at this. It's so lit up. It's so bright. Mm. And we were saying to Greg, well, where are you doing the gig? He says, well, you're going to go where the bingo caller is. You're going to do from there. And we're like, right. And there's a good few women in here going, right. And then everyone goes, right, this is the last game. And then the game's over. All the women cleared out.
Oh.
About five women left sitting there going, what the fuck is this?
I was halfway through my set and went, check!
I'm actually Irish, but good observation. Fair play to Mrs. Like, that's it. But I think that's, like, they're part of becoming a comedian. It's part of growing up, part of experiencing. And that's why I think you really do savour the good gigs then when they do come along, you know?
Yeah, or as they say on the South Side, they build your resilience.
Yeah. You know the old classic when you were booked to do a shy gig? Go for your profile.
I know.
Yeah, hang on and pay me ESB about my profile.
Yeah. Bring the kids on holiday.
Yeah, with my profile.
What are you paying for that field for with a profile?
Yeah. I think you'll find I did a gig for six people there 2 weeks ago on the back of a garage.
Yeah.
All right. Right, so in you go.
There's something that comes to mind, Martin, where you kind of turned up. You know the way I just find me as a comedian when I go to venues that I've never played before and I don't look at what they're like.
Mm.
You build a picture in your head, don't you?
Yeah.
And you get there and it's never that like.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
I had one recently where, because I'm working up the material for the new show, so going around England, there's these fringes you can do and build up the material. And the guys were like, I worked with the lads before and they were very sound. They were like, we got you a gig in a, you love a drink, we got you a drink in a gig in a brewery, right? And you'll be a lock in after.
Oh, brilliant. I think a dream gig.
Yeah. We turn up and it's where they keep the kegs in this pub. They moved all the kegs. There's this drainage around the whole room. Concrete walls like a fucking Soviet prison.
Right? Gulag.
And there's a 10-foot wall right beside the bar, so you can hear the bar. And I was like, you can hear the radios. I got a soundproof curtain. The soundproof curtain.
Curtain.
The soundproof curtain went up to my waist.
Like a dress on you.
Yeah. And then there's a dog in the room as well. Someone brought their dog with them.
Jesus.
And like, you know, I got a few barks, a couple of laughs.
Yeah.
But if you make a dog bark at a gig, I think that's half the gig.
Yeah.
That's like, but what? Right, so that's one of your craziest, weirdest gigs. Mm. Do you have a gig in your venue in your head, Martin, which you think a dream gig, the best gig, the most enjoyable gig I've ever had? That's putting people on the spot, I know, because a lot of people have a lot of gigs, which is great.
But tying in with the comics you saw and all this, I never was a big fan of stand-up, really. Then I was in college, and David O'Doherty played my college, right? And I thought he was brilliant. And so I started maybe 2 years after that, and I ended up gigging with him 6 years in. And I love Vicar Street. And I did a gig with him somewhere. He was doing one of his trying out material in town in a club. He saw me and he's like, "I'm doing Vicar Street next week, doing a support."
Oh, yes.
And he's like, "Yeah, do three of them." And I was like, that was like full circle.
What a brilliant dream.
Brilliant. And I was like, I'm done now.
Yeah. I've achieved it. I can hand me notes in now.
Yeah, isn't it great? Like when you kind of get that and you're trying to act real cool. Like, do you know what I mean? You're going, "Oh, Vicar Street, why are you looking at me dirty?" Yeah. And you're looking at three shit gigs that you have going.
Yeah. It'll be tough. I'll have to turn down the wool shed. But
Vicar Street is like it's one of them rooms, isn't it? And come here. The comedy fans, they're going to see comedy in any way, so they're up for a laugh.
100%.
Like, it's not as if you've got to get in and kind of, you know, woke for it. Like, once you've got something that's going to get you off of start,
But there is the added pressure, though, I think, as well, of, like, if your first time doing Vicar Street, man, can be a little bit, overwhelming. But I think, like, remember our first times, it was a little bit, like, as you say, I remember you said your first time there, you felt like a rabbit caught in the headlights. Mm. But then once you get the first laugh in, you just settle down.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is, isn't it? And then you appreciate the size of it, the acoustics, the lighting, everything. It's just perfect for comedy. Yeah. It really is.
Those things come along, you know, it'll be a big gig like that. But, you know, you have to aim, you have to fucking, you know, these high pressure things, but you nail it. The first time you do a bit of telly or something, you're like, fucking nail this. And you do it. And
It's an achievement. Yeah. The added pressure I was talking about was, like, you know, when people go to gigs, big gigs, say in Vicar Street, or a lot of the time when the support act comes out, they're like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, here we bleed and go." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you do have that initial trying to win them over. And then it's a great feeling when they go, "Actually, he's all right, he's about it all." Like, you know what I mean?
I remember years ago going to see Des in Vicar Street. Mm. I went with a mate of mine, and Tommy Nicholson was support.
Oh, yeah.
And he was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
And me and my mate were like, he was.
But crying. Initially, when he walked out, you know, Tommy, we were not going, "What's the story here?"
No, you were. It was kind of like that. But I mean, them gigs like that, Martin, that you talked about, them big rooms, you know, where they're there for comedy, it's like standing there with a surfboard, and the minute you get the first laugh, like, that's the wave, and you just jump up on the board then, and you just keep fucking delivering it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And before you know it, your 15 or 20 minutes is just gone.
Yeah.
And you're obviously, you've obviously done all the festivals here in Ireland now as well, Martin. They're regular at the Ivy Guards, the Paddy Power Comedy Festival, the Cat Laughs. Just say to all them, Electric Picnic, all of them festival gigs. Electric Picnic, for instance, like, I always find an utterly bizarre gig because you're delighted you've got your weekend pass and your plus one, you're down there for the weekend, but the gig itself can be hard work, especially if there's blade coming in from another tent and people are walking in and out. Now, you expect to walk in and out, but it's when, whatever time slot you're on, there could be a big act on and there's fucking barely anyone in the tent. Yeah. And it's quite soul destroying, like it is. I mean, like, do you have a modus operandi then? Do you go, what'll I do here? Just fucking, just suck it up, I suppose.
Yeah,
don't you?
I'm usually too drunk to care.
That's the
new plan.
Yeah.
I'm always going on with my third drink, fucking wander. Yeah. Walk on like Tommy Nick.
Who's this fella?
They're tough. Like, I did All Together Now last year.
Oh, yeah.
I was lucky because I saw some of the acts had no one in the tent, whatever. I had to follow Tommy Tiernan. Tommy Tiernan, right? And it was lucky because it was packed for him. People outside. That wasn't a huge tent, so people were like outside the tent. And everyone who was outside fucked off after Tommy.
Was it a tent in Altogether Now, man?
Yeah, it was a tent.
Because the first year I did it was a Spiegel tent. You know them? Remember the old Spiegel tent that was in that?
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. Like,
it was a bit smaller than that, but it was so wet and muddy, no one could sit down, everyone's standing.
Right.
And everyone outside fucks off. And then I go on after Tommy. And it was the advantage of following Tommy. You could go on angry, being like, "He's fucking off now, and I have to fucking deal with this." But it was then 10 minutes in, across the field, there was a bandstand, and some all these trumpet players started up.
Oh.
And you could just see everyone going, "Huh?
What's going on here?
Listening.
That sounds like we're all correct. We better head over there."
Yeah.
Like, they're trying really hard to listen to the jokes or whatever. And I come off, and the sound man goes, Could you hear that band over there? He's like, yeah. He goes, nothing I can do about it.
So what you asking for?
I bring it up. But yeah, they're killer, those festivals, man.
Martin, have you done Edinburgh?
I did it before the pandemic. I did the free fringe. I'm doing the paid fringe for the first time this year.
Okay. What's your venue?
Underbelly.
Nice.
5:30 in the day, which is nice.
Oh, that's a fucking great slot. That's a brilliant
for all
slot.
The big acts.
Not too early, not too late.
Doing very well for yourself, Martin. Fair play.
Could be the pre-show before the big show.
Well, that's the plan.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so you could be the starter for people that are going to see the bigger acts. Exactly. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It is a great time. 4:30 is good.
Yeah.
Half five. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's 5:30. I mean, you could still get in at 5:30, get your hour, get a bit of food, and then move on to where you're going at 9:00 or whatever it might be, yeah.
And do you think, having done the free fringe, it's prepared you, Martin, in any way? And
yeah, well, I feel a lot less pressure about it now.
Okay.
You know? And, and having done it before, you're like,
I
know what to expect. I know how to put an hour together. And I'm not panicking. I'm used to having done the free fringes before. You're used to gigging to 15 people or whatever.
And flyering your own show and all that.
I've never flyered.
Oh, man, tell me. Why not?
I just can't do it. The rejection. The only way to do it is if you have a flyer, you have to be like self-deprecating. Going, could you just put that in the bin for me?
This fella here.
That's what you're going
to
do anyway.
This fella here, to my right, Martin, is the best seller of a free show I've ever met in my life. I did the free fringe in 2013 or 12 or something like that. And Willie came over. Willie came over to support me, you know, fair play to him. Not to go on before me, I mean to support me, give me encouragement
financially.
And I really struggled with the whole flirting thing as well, Martin. I just felt, like you said, like the rejection and all that. Will asks, give me them.
Yeah.
And he's walking down the street as he does for his conference and he goes, me mate Eric's doing a show in there. What was the fucking show at the venue?
Some monkey, was it?
No, it was named after bleeding. Heroin. What was it?
The opium den.
Opium. Oh, opium was called.
Yeah.
And he says, me mate's
in there. Down to the ground.
He says, me mate's in there doing the free show. It's a free in and it's a tenner to get back out. Right? Yeah. And they were all like,
if you don't like it, you get your money back.
And they were all stopping.
Looking at me like
and
that,
listening
you know?
To him and going, and then they were just taking, and then 25 minutes later, I see them all in the show.
Yeah,
I'm looking at him going, well, you've earned me at least a fiver.
The knuckle duster.
But it was a brilliant experience. I think every comic should do Edinburgh at least once.
Yeah. Not me.
Not you.
No, I'm not
too long in the tooth now.
But
you've done it.
It's not about too long in the tooth. I'll just tell you. No, I haven't done it. I've went over and I've done Best of Irish and I've done a few gigs here and I've done the Stand and then went from there and went up to Glasgow and come back down and I've done a play there for a couple of weeks and that. But I remember seeing two comics in particular who I'm not going to name, one year at Dublin Airport after coming home and doing a month. And I looked at the two of them and I went, there and then I said to myself, I'm never doing Edinburgh. Because these two men
were
fucking broken. I mean broken. Yeah. It's like they were standing there waiting on their mum and dad to pick them up and just hug them and go, yeah, all right, son, come on, get in the car. I'll bring you home and give you a bleeding bowl of soup. And I just said, I said, I'm not, it doesn't interest me. Mm. It really doesn't. And I will go over and I'll go. I remember one year I went over and I was upstairs, the Late and Live was on.
Yeah.
And John Bishop was hosting and Jason Bourne was on. And me and Eric used to go over and stay with Jason. So I happened to go up to Late and Live with Jason because I'm staying with him. He said, come on up here. So we used to go to the gig and sitting there, me and John and Jason is talking and John goes, do you want to go on? And I went, what? He goes, do you want to go out and do 10, 15 minutes? And I went, yeah, all right. He goes, really? I says, yeah, not a bother. He goes, right. So he brings me out. I get to the mic. And I actually done all right.
Yeah.
I done okay, you know. And I remember going downstairs.
And that's a vicious
Neil Delamere was looking at me going, wait, are you just on the telly? Because you know when you're in the library bar and all the acts off Late and Live. He goes, did I see you on the telly? I says, yeah, yeah. He goes, fucking hell, man. It's like the Lions Den.
Yeah.
The bear pit, call it.
No, I know, yeah.
It's savage.
Is that what they call the bear pit?
So, Martin, obviously, see you on Instagram, I see you on social media, and you gig everywhere. Like, not just Ireland.
Yeah, and I go.
You and Jerry Staunton. Yeah. Take his thieves. But I love that relationship. I think, did you still a pilot for a cop show? Or you should do. You should do. You two would make a brilliant cop duo. Brilliant, him and Jer. And I love that, your signature photograph, the two of you.
miserable.
Looking absolutely miserable, but a pint of Guinness going, having an amazing time here.
Well, we gig a lot around Europe and we always try and find a decent Guinness. It hasn't happened yet.
Where's the best one you've had so far?
This is a surprise, yeah. There's a pub in Slovakia, in Bratislava, owned by an Irish guy called Ishka Baha.
Ishka Baha?
The pub is called Ishka Baha.
The pub's called Ishka Baha.
I thought he was called Ishka Baha. That's what we're on about all the time. Aiden, Ishka Baha.
Come on, that was a pub in Slovakia.
Mika Baha's young lad.
Well, yeah, that's the best I've had on the continent.
And you like a pint of Guinness, Martin?
Big fan of a pint of Guinness.
Man, I've seen you. I've seen you make love to many a pint of Guinness. You don't just swallow them. You're like, see you look at them and all.
Would
you be one for splitting the J and all?
No, none of that.
Bullshit, isn't it?
No, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Just enjoy
What's it called?
Splitting the G.
What's splitting the G?
You know, G on the glass. Yeah. You drink so you get to the middle of it.
So you one sip.
One sip, yeah.
At the start, and you try to finish.
When I used to drink, I used to be able to drink a pint in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow.
If you get a pint glass of water now, I'd probably drink it in 4 seconds.
I don't want you to drown on the podcast.
No, I don't pretend. I used to drink pints.
Also, people are listening.
Not going out for a night out with me missus, like 9 points and leave 26 seconds sitting there like that. You know what I mean?
She's only after her fourth drink. It's time to get home.
Sitting there with two mouthfuls of a glass of wine. We made points down. I never liked you, man. And as to that dress, your whole huge.
For somebody who's in recovery, he does the best drunk impression ever.
Yeah.
Ever. It's the lips and the tongue and that. Those gigs actually in Europe, it's particularly around mainland Europe, man. What are they like at all? Are they English speaking for starters?
Everyone's English speaking now because you talk to people after, and it's people from the countries there. So you've been to Slovakia and it's loads of Slovakians, and you're like, how do you get this?
Yeah.
They all watch Netflix, they all have YouTube and clips and all that.
Yeah.
Everywhere is the same now.
Okay.
It's like gigging in England or whatever.
Is it? And how do you play? How do you get them type of gigs? Like, you know?
Some of them, I met people through being in Edinburgh and stuff, or people come over here and you meet them and they go, oh, I've got a gig here. I'll set you up with this person. All that kind of, you know, true pints mainly.
The great network.
You know what? I was meant to, I probably will later in the year. Right. In Barcelona.
There's an Irish guy who runs a couple of gigs in Barcelona.
I was booked to do a Barcelona gig, but then COVID came along. Mm. I've never followed her up. I should follow her up. Yeah. I'd love to go to Barcelona.
There's a few clubs there, yeah.
Yeah.
We done a gig over in Spain last year, wasn't it?
Malaga. Oh, Alicante.
Oh, stop, man. So your man basically was selling us a pig in a fucking bag, like.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we went over and it was a fucking disaster.
Yeah.
That's the best way to put it, do you know what I mean? And then there was like bleed negotiating with money and all that, and I just released a Ballymun scumbag and I says, listen, you're paying the fucking dollar, like.
Yeah.
I don't care who's there or who's not there. We're not coming over here out of good faith, goodwill. Mm-hmm. You agree to bleeding deal. It's not bleeding. You're not Noel Edmonds, like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Deal or no deal.
Yeah.
That's the deal. That's the Moulin Rouge. Show me the bleeding money.
Yeah.
And we went in and we gigged in front of about 16 people.
Yeah.
All stuck. It was in a weed club, smokers bleeding club. And for someone that's a bleeding recovering drug addict, it's not the best place to be.
No. Nearly had a relapse.
I was wondering when I come out of there why I had bleeding 18 bags of tea. Now, do you know what I mean? Like, it was just one of them gigs where you went, fuck off. Like,
it just didn't work. It didn't work. We had a good trip, though. We had a good trip.
We had a great time.
Yeah.
We saved himself and Danny O'Brien.
Yeah.
Danny O'Brien, big up Danny O'Brien, is over climbing Kilimanjaro.
That's right.
As we speak.
Yeah.
What's he doing that for?
Because he's got a show called Killer Danjaro.
Yeah.
That he's bringing to Edinburgh.
Wow.
And it's about climbing Kilimanjaro.
I fucking hope it's funny.
Yeah.
So do I.
I hope something funny happens while he's up there.
He'd probably be taunting the people in the audience, be getting altitude sickness. All masks getting held around.
Yeah.
He
came back and he's like, nothing funny happened.
And Chris Kent's new show was offline.
Offline, yeah.
I spoke to him the other day on the phone and he's literally...
Offline?
He's like literally completely... And I said to him, he said, I'm going to be doing gigs. I says, what about the Airbnb? He says, I'm just going to have to ring them. Wow. He says, I can't Google where I'm staying. I can't do... He said, he's completely offline.
Off the grid.
Yeah.
Wow. Your new show is called Ill Wind?
Idiot Wind.
Idiot Wind. I like that. That's it. Remember, we were only talking, this is the last podcast with your man, William Thompson.
Yeah.
If you have a show name that grabs you, and that's one that fucking grabs you, Idiot Wind.
Yeah, what, yeah.
Is there a reason?
Well, Idiot Wind is the stupid stuff that comes out of a comedian's mouth.
I like that.
And I'm trying to do, because the thing now is that I've never written like a themed show. It's not that, it's lots of jokes, but a lot of people say to you now, I find if you're in a taxi or whatever, they find that you're a comedian, they're like, oh, you can't say anything these days, it's supposed to be very difficult. And I think you can. And I'm usually like, well, watch this. Mm. And you can do whatever you like, but you have to.
It's the way you say it.
It's the way you do it, deliver it.
Yeah.
You better put a spin on it. So you can get away with it. So I'm trying to be more, controversial is not the right word, but I'm talking about.
Or
topics and
brave or pushing the boundaries a little bit more, kind of thing. More, yeah,
you know.
Good on you, man.
Stay at home and watch the fucking internet. Like,
yeah.
If you're offended or something's, you
stay
know,
at home and watch the internet.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you're offended or you're easily, I mean, no one is going to like everything that you talk about. Like,
no, of course not.
That's a given. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, so if you're, get over it.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? It's not personal. It's a joke. It's an observation. It's a story.
Yeah.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
They say stand-up comedy is the last bastion of free speech. That, you know, we are the ones who should be pushing the boundaries. And Martin and Golo is going to be pushing the boundaries. So you heard that first. Liberty Hall, what date again, Martin?
November 2nd.
November 2nd. Idiot Wind. Tickets on sale. You go and get them, or me and Will I'll be around your gaff.
There's plenty available.
Here, tell me about it. I'm on September 19th.
Now, come here. Are you going to bring it anywhere else?
Are you going all,
well, obviously, around. You're going to the Fringe Festival.
Fringe Festival. Then I'm all around the country. So Cork, Limerick, Kilkenny, Claremorris,
Galway.
Where
can people get tickets, Martin?
If you follow me online, Martin Angolo, if you type Martin Angolo into Google, it'll come up.
Yeah.
I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
MartinAngolo.com. I think I have a website.
Do you? Yeah.
I might do.
Ooh, flash one.
You know,
you're getting a website as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so Jer Staunton, another comedian, he bought the rights to MartinAngolo.com.
No way.
And for years, he'd change it every so often to something, so he'd be like, because I always turn up late to things. That was bad as Eric, but I turn up late and he'd link it to an article of like, are you always turning up late to things? You know?
Yeah. Brilliant.
Or he's linking to jokes on my site. I used to have a whole joke about, you know, looking like Keenan and Kel. and he'd link it to like a BuzzFeed quiz. Are you Keenan or Kel? MartinAngolo.com.
That's great, man, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what it is now, but he's probably fuck around now.
Yeah, Jay's a great fella, man.
A lot of people would know you, Martin, from your big break, let's be honest. The Amazon, Graham Norton, what was it called?
Last One Laughing.
Yeah, because he's got Last Man Laughing. Yeah, what about Ashley?
What about Deirdre O'Kane?
So, like, can you tell us a little bit about how that happened? And like, what were your initial thoughts? Were you like, oh my God. I'd rather not, Eric.
No.
Big leader.
Would you like to know how that happened? Go to Martin and Golan.
I got asked to be on it. They saw me, the production people saw me. I think it was with Jer as well. I think we did the Ivy Gardens. And I was hosting. I did a thing where I got him back on stage. I was fucking around with him. I had like a slide whistle. And he was like, they'd be like, that'll be good for the show.
Right.
So they got me on. And it was like 10 hours in a room. 10 comedians, not allowed to laugh, try and make each other laugh. And after about, you know, after a couple of hours, it gets tough.
Right.
Sitting around with comedians who are just on all the time.
Yes.
And Jason Byrne bouncing around the place.
Yeah.
You're like, you're trying not to laugh at the start, then you're like, for fuck's sake.
You know? Yeah, then you get annoying.
And they send like Jedward in, and you're like, fuck's sake, Jedward.
Did they come in?
Yeah, they sent Jedward in at one point. Yeah. The hardest part not to laugh at was they recreated the Den, and they sent in Chris de Burgh, right? And he sang Lady in Red because Amy Huberman wrote a letter about wanting to meet Chris de Burgh, and he came in and sang Lady in Red. And he wasn't meant to get in the middle of us, but he walks into the room, gets in the middle of all of us, starts singing. And Jason Byrne went up to him, right to his face, and went, I thought you were fucking dead.
Who knocked you out? What did you laugh at?
What did I laugh at? There's a few they didn't catch because you're able because they have to get it on camera to
replay. Right, okay.
So there's a couple. Ashley and B got me a bit drunk, which helped. I think I accidentally walked in on Amy Huberman changing.
Right.
She was dressed up as a mermaid. There's a little changing room, and she was.
Does that make you laugh?
Well,
each other on.
Maybe feel many things.
Yeah.
Bored if you listen. Not true.
Yeah.
But then, fishy about that, man.
But yeah, a bit fishy. yeah, but then basically I got they had to get down to the last two. So I was, by elimination, I just got knocked out.
Yeah.
So I was technically robbed. Everyone says you were robbed on it.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people watched it. It was very well.
Did you get to the last two?
I got to the last, I think it was like four of us at the end.
Right.
And they had to get to two. So they went, Jason's made more people laugh, and Deirdre just made more people laugh.
Right.
You and McSavage are out.
Type of thing. Jesus.
And, did you enjoy the experience, man?
Oh, it was good crack. Yeah. It was lovely. Yeah, I mean, it was just mad. You go a bit mental after 10 hours of just straight filming.
Just cabin fever almost.
Yeah, and they show this weird stuff. I did, like, Crystal Burks. Was that real?
I thought you said crystal meth. They were throwing crystal meth. That would have been some show.
Yeah.
The crystal meth, not the crystal maze.
But a lot of people have seen it. It was very well advertised. So, like, I get a lot of people stopping me going, oh, yeah.
It was huge, man. Huge, that's when I was like, wow.
How did you find Graham Norton?
Oh, lovely. He was great.
I heard he's a gent.
He was at the rap party and, pure sound. You can tell he's got a bit of money because he just sits there and a guy comes over and pours him his own wine.
Okay.
So, you know, and then leaves the bottle and there's someone keeping an eye on his glass going, give Graham a bit more wine.
Make sure he doesn't get spiked.
Yeah.
Jeez, imagine when you've hit that pinnacle in your career.
Yeah.
Where I'm sitting here,
yeah,
a cup of minerals, right? And I'm going like that, look at. And then bleeding PJ or Seamus is coming in looking in the glass and going, give me a bit more.
Top that up.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? That's something else, isn't it?
But he made a point of talking to everyone and it was, you know, bang on. Like, I was like, if he was a dick, I'd be like, yeah, fair play.
Yeah.
Graham Norton, you're huge. Yeah.
You've every right to be. You've earned it.
If I were you, I'd be a dick. I'm not
that,
even
man.
Famous, I'm a bit of a dick. You know. But yeah, lots of people saw it. And then, but Amazon's a weird one because a lot of people don't have Amazon. So, but it was so well advertised. I get the same amount of people who've seen it coming up to me going, I see you're on that show, but I'm not fucking paying for Amazon.
I see you're on that show, but I'm not paying fucking €10. Bollocks for that. I was going to see you in a live show.
Yeah.
But that's it. Like, I mean, it must have been like on the back of that then, Martin, did you feel a difference in your career? That you gotten more recognised, getting bigger and better gigs and all that kind of thing?
Exactly, yeah. You get offered more stuff.
Open more doors, yeah?
Open more doors. Brilliant. Stuff that there's a lot of talking about doing things.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, what's you involved in this? Or, like, I'm not even like acting things. I'm not an actor. I know you guys have done acting. And I'm,
I'm agreement with you what you're saying because you've never got the job until you've got the job.
Exactly.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people saying, oh, look at your name. Your name is on the mix for this, and you're kind of. Like, you kind of just take it with a pinch of salt.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you don't.
The one I was that made me realise this was Chris O'Dowd has a series coming out on Sky. And I got asked to audition for it and sent in a tape. They're like, oh, send in another tape. And then it will send you some scripts. They sent me a couple of scripts for it. And then they sent me the outline of the series, right?
The
character they wanted me to play, the photo reference for the character was 3 photos of me. I'm going, oh, fuck it, I got this. It's
you with the blueprint.
They want me. They want a Martin Angolo type character. Then I auditioned for the thing again, didn't get it. I wasn't Martin Angolo enough.
Who the fuck is out Martin Angolo?
It's very hard to
Angolo.
Be you, isn't it?
It's very hard to be me. People don't know the struggle.
Yeah. It's real, isn't it?
Even I don't know.
I don't know my own struggles.
Well, I just thought I must be a really shit actor if I can't play myself.
I went, the biggest audition I went for to date was the gentleman, boy, what's his name? Guy Ritchie.
You
know the one that was on Netflix? I auditioned for the main traveller in that.
Mm.
And I do a great traveller accent and I thought, you know.
Yeah.
But look, at the same time, I'm like what I just said, you haven't got the job until you've got the job.
Yeah.
And I think the one thing that you need, if you're going to do a bit of acting or you are an actor, is that you've got to be very, very good with rejection because you get an awful lot of it.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could be what they're looking for,
mm-hmm.
but you maybe haven't got the acting skills or maybe you have the acting skills and you're not facially or physically what they're looking
exactly.
for.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's
kind of like, you know, it's been in the right place kind of at the right time, isn't
it? Yeah. I did a film 2 years ago. It's like Frank and Rocha, an Irish language film. I went to an Irish language school. And I worked with the director before on a TG Carr thing. And he was like, oh, I really want you in my film. I was like, oh, yeah, sure. I'm not an actor. And I was like, my Irish isn't great. And he's like, oh, no, it'll be perfect. Do a tape. We'll send it in. Yada, yada, yada. The cast of people went, yeah, Martin, they want a meeting with you, the cast of people. And I met up with, I think her name, Maureen Hughes.
Oh, yeah, Maureen. She's a lovely woman.
I had a one-on-one meeting with her. And straight away she went, I saw your tape. You're not an actor.
She knows.
Oh, she's out straight.
Yeah. I was straight. And she was like, I've worked with them all. We'll work here for an hour and I'll make you better. And after an hour she went, I don't think it's going to work.
We're going to need more than an hour.
And then 2 weeks later, the director calls me and goes, I got another part for you. The character's name is Martin. You have four lines, just learn it.
Yeah, the gig is yours.
Look at shit cocaine, Bart. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Four lines, man. That's it.
It's funny you should mention Maureen. She was the first person I auditioned for as well.
Oh, yeah.
When Love Hate was on. Yeah, and I was like, I've never acted before, but like Lisa Richards was saying, well, you have a Dublin accent, get down there and fucking do the audition. So I went down and did the audition and she was there and as I was doing it, she kept going, yeah, that's really good, really good. And I was going, here I was to myself, she probably says that to everyone just to ease, but subsequently I found out, if you're not doing it, as you've just alluded to, if you're not doing it right, she won't be sure telling you, like, you know. No. So that's really good, really good, really good. And I was going, all right, sound. And she goes, wait. And I got a phone call later on that evening. You're in. I was like, what? I'm in Love, hey? Start ringing me mates and all, my family, thrilled for me because they're all big fans. Yeah. And then I got another phone call the next day. She goes, Eric, I'm really sorry, but RT have overruled me. And I was like, what? Can you get RT to ring all my mates? My family, like, you know, it's fucking sick. Yeah. But in her defense, she invited me in for the chat the next day and she was starting off this new screen acting course in the old factory studios down at Barrow Street.
Yeah, I remember you done that, yeah.
Before they moved. Now it's up in...
Drop that name on the floor, Eric, who you done it with. Drop it.
No. I'm telling you what the name of the new place is. It's moved up beside Jemison Distillery. Bow Street, there we go, yeah. Paul, yes. Paul's missus in the acting game as well. She knows all about it. And it was just... So we got 3 years of screen acting and it taught me so many things that I've gotten about three parts.
About ringing people and telling them that RTE...
Yeah, yeah, never jump before the horse is bolted kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it was, as Willie said, name dropping all that. I was very lucky that in that course, it was half the course cast of Love Hay, Barry Keoghan, Jack Rayner.
Waiting to pick that name.
So, if it's a listening out there, lads.
Did you turn up on time?
What?
Did you turn up on time for that?
I
say you did.
Yeah.
I didn't arrive sweating.
I got into Love Hay.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I got a second calling back for Fran the Man, Kula Bula. But come here, the fella that was meant to get it got it. He played Frank Keoghan.
Peter Keoghan.
Peter Keoghan played an amazing part. You couldn't take it away from him. And I kind of got a consolation of being an alarm fitter in one of the houses. And I still got to remember Kevin Bridges putting up a tweet on Twitter going, my man will why is it Love Hay? And that was good enough for me.
Yeah.
The 5 minutes I got in it was like, but just Kevin to kind of say that, I was like, yeah, I was
mad, you know what I mean?
But now, I'd have loving not to take the part because there was obviously another couple of series to come after that and kind of stood back and waited to see if we'd have got a different bus. I was in it with Robert Ting. What's his name?
Robert Shane.
Lovely fella. And I took the small part and I saw my soul, basically.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
They gave me a small part in it as well as a consolation, but it never made the cut. So I was some security guard and Ruth Bradley and the kids and they're at a hospital and I had the same and I was going, where are you? I was going, come back here. Watch your way back. And it was so good that I never made the final edit. That was my claim to fame. Not being in Love Hay twice. But then, do you know, like, is it something that maybe picks your interest a little bit, Martin, a bit of acting or just not really. Comedy all the way?
Yeah, not really. I don't think it's my skill set. And I find a lot of actors weird.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, come here. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
A lot of struggling actors go into stand-up.
Yes.
And they're the worst stand-ups. Because stand-up's best when it's natural. Mm-hmm. And actors are always like performance of nail this.
And a lot of struggling stand-ups come into acting.
I'm not sure where I sit on the spectrum. Am I a struggling stand-up or a struggling actor? I don't know.
Yeah. But no, it's not my skill. Okay. I feel out of place doing it. Like, people sometimes ask me to be in stuff and I'm like, I'm not an actor. I'm telling you. I can only do this way. And they're like, you'd be fine. And I start doing it and they're like, can I do it another way?
I fucking told you.
So, yeah, it's a bit like, you know, I'll do little bits, but, yeah. So, auditioning is fucking...
Martin Sinatra, my way.
Yeah.
No, I said my way.
But you're dead right, Martin. The whole audition process has changed.
Listen to me. See them tapes.
Self-tapes.
Yeah.
I remember doing, I had my missus up to 2:15 in the morning and her eyes were hanging out of her head. Mm. And I'm going, just film it one more time.
Yeah.
And we, oh, it was a disaster.
Well, you see, that's the worst of cell taping, because you're, like, what was happening there, Will, was you were obviously second guessing yourself, because you're not getting any feedback. You're going with what you think is the way they want it, and you're hoping it's the way they want it, and then you look at it back and go, oh no, that's shit. Whereas when you're in the room with the director and the casting director, sometimes you get that feedback, and also you can, you know, they see what sort of a personality you are, and that's key for a lot of directors, that you're not going to be a fucking knob on the set, and that you're going to be someone that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, but even when you're doing the cell tapes, as I'm sure you've had the experience yourself, you're going, I'm nailing this, and you get to the last line and you fuck up one of the warts and you're like, oh, bollocks. It's like snakes and ladders. It's like you get up to number 99 and you hit the snake's head and you're straight back down to number one again. You're going, and I think the more frustrated you get and the more angry you get, the worse it gets, like.
Yeah,
you're supposed to be playing a person who's joyfully happy, and all they can see is rage and frustration in your face.
Kicking the table all around the place. Fucking knuckles all busted from punching the wall and all.
Yeah. I think a lot of the casting people know now that I'm a reluctant actor, because I always get sense of, they're like, Martin, it's five lines, just tape it yourself, it'll be fine.
You actually already have a reputation out there.
I'd say there's a lot of cast directors called Senator Martin.
Yeah. See what Martin says.
Senator Martin, come on.
I dare you.
I bet you he says he only has his way of doing it. The Martin on Golo group chat between all the cast and directors.
Send them that. Man, when I did that Chris O'Dowd one, and I called in for a final audition in person with Chris O'Dowd. And
did you?
Yeah. And here's how we're all dropping names now.
He went all the way there, didn't he, with that one?
I know.
And fuck,
I
thought, the group chat. Get Chris. Yeah. ring him. He's in the area.
Well, they wouldn't fly him over just to tell me I didn't get the barrel. Oh, they did.
He did the cunts.
But I was reading it, because he's a proper actor.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise these things of, like, you know, you have to think about the character. And, like, he was there asking me questions. He was squatting in front of me going, and what do you think of the arc of your character? I was like, well, I read two scripts. So, you know, he's quite funny, isn't he? He's like, but he goes on a journey. I'm like, oh, I think I'll play him funny. You know?
Yeah. Yeah,
should we get on the Lewis?
Yeah. And he was like, what was it? He was like, do you have any questions about the character? I was like, no, I think I got it. And then just, I was like, oh, I should have made up something.
Yeah.
What's his motivation?
He was like, and how do you feel about him? He used to work in a zoo, and now he's, I was like, he worked in a zoo? Yeah, that must have been tough.
How's that going to affect his character?
Yeah, you know I didn't read that bit.
Well, that's when you know when you're in real acting territory, when producers or directors start asking you questions like that. I remember doing a play before with Dustin the Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Dustin the Turkey. Me and Dustin the Turkey were doing a play. And I remember the casting director saying to me...
It's a long way from Barry Keoghan, isn't it?
Yeah.
It was actually Barry Keoghan that was playing the Turkey. Yeah.
Johnny Morrissey had his hands shoved up his arse.
All right, mate.
But it was just...
Maybe a different version of Saltburn. Dustin the Turkey.
It was going around a dance floor.
Yeah. Yeah. We're totally into it.
But I remember being told, you know, this is the character you're playing, Eric. You know, can you bring something to it? Like, you know, what is different about him?
And I'm
like,
sauce.
I didn't really get it or understand what they were talking about. And I was like, so he started doing a limp or something. She was like, what are you doing? She has a limp. No, I mean, what can you bring to the role? It was going, all right,
Brussels sprouts.
Maybe a stammer. I started stammer or something. She's going, no, you're fucking easy. She was only sure saying that, like, you know. Yeah. But that was the toughest. Like, we'll go there in another podcast, but that was the toughest thing I've ever done in my
life. Maybe a Christmas episode.
Yeah, PTSD. Yeah. Still suffering from it. I really am.
Oh, really?
Martin, before we let you go, is there anything else beside the show you're plugged in Liberty Hall Theatre, which is on November the
2nd.
Saturday, November 2nd. Oh, it's a Saturday as well. I couldn't get a Saturday.
Yeah, and just to say, if there's any casting agents out there, Martin's available to be took the piss out.
Do it his way or no way. Anything else coming up, Martin?
It's just gigging, really. It's the main thing. Trying to get in meetings about doing TV stuff or whatever.
In the pipeline.
Yeah.
In the pipeline.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah, I'll come back and plug that sometime.
Brilliant.
Well, Martin, I'd love to see you getting a big part on something. Yeah. Wouldn't it be gas? Like, there was just a casting director out there and went, do you know what? I'm fucking giving him the part. Yeah. He's got to do it his way. He's got to be fucking Martin Angolo.
Yeah.
And that's it. And you know, next year there's a fucking feature film on somewhere and you just see you.
You're watching Bridgerton. And it's like, it's an English period. A man just comes and goes, Arlie, what's the story?
Black Dublin guy.
How are you doing? What's going on?
Starry,
hey, Arlie. Arlie, yeah.
Are you selling the horse? Are you selling the horse?
You're the big gamey, no, ain't you?
I don't want the saddle.
Martin Angolo, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast.
Cheers for having us.
Thanks. Thanks so much, you're a gentleman.
Pleasure.
Don't forget to follow Martin Angolo Comedy on all social channels. You find out where he's playing and where you can get the tickets. Good luck.
Good night and God bless.